Members of the board, Chairman Corbett, thank you to Becky and Aaron for providing a great overview of the Marine Life Protection Act. My name is Paul Hobie. I am the community coordinator for the MPA Collaborative Network, which is an exciting, you know, relatively new initiative to ensure that community members and stakeholders are part of marine protected area stewardship and management. So, if you're still hungry for lunch, have some more Logo soup. This represents the statewide collaborative network. So we were started in 2012 out of a need to keep stakeholders involved in MPA management. And we worked with CDFW and others to develop a proposal to begin these marine protected area collaboratives in San Mateo, Santa Barbara, and San Diego counties. And sort of based on the success of those in 2012, we began expanding to the rest of the coast to encompass all of California's counties in 14 marine protected area collaboratives, which were completed in 2014. So for the sake of the North Coast Water Board, we have four collaboratives, the Sonoma Collaborative, the Mendocino Collaborative, the Humboldt Collaborative, and the Del Norte Collaborative, which all overlap with the Water Board's jurisdiction. They are all, very active and full of members that represent a wide variety of stakeholders, including tribal members, fishermen, agencies ranging from municipal, county, state, and federal agencies, including the representatives of the marine sanctuaries, and scientists. Our real goal is to engage stakeholders locally, right? The MLPA, I think Becky alluded to, set the bar really high for community participation, with literally hundreds of meetings to determine where these marine protected areas would be sited and, many thousands of people that participated in those meetings. So the collaborative network was really founded to keep those stakeholders involved. One big challenge, as I'm sure it is for the water boards, is ensuring participation from a wide geography, right? Especially in the North Coast. Often rural areas are difficult, to access for policymakers, and it's difficult for stakeholders that live there to, end up in Sacramento or Santa Rosa for a decision-making meeting. So we find that by engaging stakeholders, locally on the coast, we're able to, ensure participation from a wider swath of folks, and really help give them a voice in these, management decisions that involve our marine protected areas. So, the real bedrock of our strategy is to tap these area experts and to share resources. The goal is really to convene this MPA community that I alluded to earlier and give them a voice in ongoing management. And, I think the reason why this is important is because the best, studies from around the world have shown that the best outcomes, the best biological outcomes, the strongest and most effective marine protected areas come from coupling a community-centric approach with a robust network of, network scale statewide management. So the piece that we're really contributing to is that community-centric approach. Our collaboratives build the community support and the social capital necessary for the success of the MPAs biologically, as well as socially, right? I mean, the marine protected areas are, will exist so long as folks support them, right? There will be a 10-year review at the Fish and Game Commission in 2022. There was strong resistance to establishing the areas, and we expect that there will be some resistance when their review comes up. So, we hope that by continuing to engage stakeholders, we can ensure their success biologically and socially and their ongoing existence. So each collaborative takes on locally based projects to increase MPA awareness through a $10,000 small grant program that was initially funded by Resource Legacy Foundation. And now was more recently, just this week, the Ocean Protection Council decided to fund that program for 2 years, so for two more years of $10,000 grants. Here, some of our Los Angeles collaborative members are proudly displaying a sign that was also funded by the Ocean Protection Council and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. You know, so our collaborative members work locally to raise awareness of marine protected areas through many of these projects. You know, this enhances the great work that CDFW is already doing and can allow for more targeted outreach to specific communities. So our Los Angeles collaborative, to tap them again, has also come up with a waterproof brochure in English and Spanish that shows areas that are still open to fishing, as well as our marine protected areas, right? You know, I know one of the board members was expressing the difficulty in finding the marine protected areas. And, you know, the idea with that project was really to show people where they can fish, as well as educating them to where they can't fish.
Yeah, by the way, it wasn't hard to find. It was just that I had to know where they were because, again, right. Spatial awareness out there, you don't want to be in the wrong area. They are special right. And they are protected. And the last thing I want to do is go out there and be in the wrong spot.
Right. And you know, we do hear from a lot of people, including enforcement officers, that it can be difficult to tell exactly where the line is, right? So one of the things that we've done is gone out there and ground truth the MPAs with GPS units taken photos to show exactly where the lines are.
Well, the other part of that, too, is that the fishing regulations are specific, like sport fishermen fishing from shore can, in some areas, all year round, where right. commercial is not, and they also differ in the regulations, so you really got to parse that out. You got to play by those rules, and if you don't, you're subject then to, you know, the enforcement that comes with being wrong, and I don't want to be wrong.
Right.
So they're complex. At least you better know that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of the game is awareness, right? And making sure that people know where they are and how to abide by them. So I think that segues nicely into my next slide for improving enforcement. So in the top left, you can see one of those lines that was drawn that looks like the Monterey Peninsula. I believe that's a Sillimar. But, you know, we've carried out enforcement trainings in each of our collaboratives along with CDFW and other allied agencies. We've worked with the state legislature to pass a bill last year, AB 298, that allows enforcement officers to write MPA violations as infractions. So what that does is it makes it easier for them to stick, right? Because there are infractions that are processed by a traffic court. Sometimes folks just have to pay a fine. So if it's a low-level first-time offender, then they're not getting a misdemeanor that gets clogged up in the courts on an overworked DA's docket. So we've also worked to help connect citizens with monitoring. Recently, we partnered with the Department, Ocean Science Trust, and the California Academy of Science on a statewide BioBlitz that involved folks doing exactly what you see here, which is hitting the coast with smartphones and logging observations using a platform called iNaturalist. Many of our collaborative members are highly interested in monitoring, and the event drew together, you know, thousands of people across the coast that logged, I think, over 10,000 observations on one day to give sort of a picture of all the biological diversity within our marine protected areas. We really focus on facilitating communication with state agencies, and that goes both ways, as you can see in this diagram. The MPA statewide leadership team consists of all the crucial agencies, including the water boards, that are really handling marine protected area management. We make sure that crucial information from those agencies ends up landing with our stakeholders and the people that need to hear about it and to participate in those decisions. We also make sure that you know, what's going on at the community level filters back up to the state. You know, one example I thought of was at, you know, Big Lagoon, a kayak rental company, Kayak Zacks, that's frequently out there in kayaks, was noticing, I think it was a species that isn't normally there, and they wanted to know exactly how they could get this information to the state level and, you know, alert scientists and policymakers. And so, you know, the advice was that the owner of Kayak Zacks should, you know, submit that in a blog post to Ocean Science Trust. So, you know, we're really able to facilitate this information flow that I think benefits both statewide policymakers and folks that are on the ground. So regarding water quality and marine protected area collaboratives, I think there are some important opportunities. You know, I already spoke about the four active MPA collaboratives within your geography, you know, from Sonoma and each coastal county moving north. Members have a high interest in water quality, especially fishermen. And, you know, there's definitely a potential to partner on community-based projects, especially given the fact that we have a new round of small grant funding. And, you know, I would imagine that there are also pots of funding that would be available for water quality. And that a lot of times that what we've seen is folks can put together a grant proposal between numerous organizations, and it becomes stronger because it's then a collaborative proposal. You know, I was also reading a little bit about the water boards. You know, goal 5 of your strategic goals is for individuals and stakeholders to support the board's efforts and to understand their role in contributing to water quality. So, you know, the collaboratives offer an opportunity for the water boards to, you know, interact with stakeholders and make sure their message is landing with people that need to hear it. You know, I could also see a nexus with water quality monitoring. There's a tremendous interest in science at our collaborative levels. And, you know, these are some opportunities that I think exist. The easiest way for the water boards to participate would be to send a representative to one of our collaborative meetings. And, you know, I'm happy to follow up with you all about that. You know, we have a newsletter that I can add you to that kind of gives an overview of what our collaborators are up to and what sort of important management decisions are coming down the pike. And I believe that is my last slide. And I'd be happy to answer any questions and call on Becky and Aaron for assistance if need be.
So are there any board members' comments or questions?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, come on.
Becky Oda, Fish and Wildlife. Thank you, Paul. That was great. And one thing about the boundaries that I want to address just a little bit. In the planning process, it was very, very important that the boundaries for the MPAs were aligned with not man-made structures. Even though there was might be a bathroom that would make a great marker that you could see very well, they had to be permanent sightings that would be there hopefully for a very long time, nothing that could go away, get torn down, you know, that it would move, to try to keep these boundaries pretty stationary and in place and avoid a lot of that wiggle room. That said, however, that's how the boundaries were defined and made up and put in place. What the collaboratives are doing is making it a little easier for on-the-water fishermen to go, oh, well, there is that bathroom. If I stay on that side of the bathroom, I'm good. If I stay on that side of the bathroom, I'm not so great. So it goes along with what the laws are for the boundaries and try to help that. There's also an app, a mobile app, that's on our website that you can also go to as a fisherman. And we have a long ways to go to help, you know, on the water fishermen with and anybody else to know what the boundaries are. But I just want to explain that in the process, that was very critical and an unmoving situation where in they had to be aligned of where a creek bed, a point of land, something like that. So just wanted to clarify.
Just to point out, as Becky's right, you know, on the open water, you're using longs and lats. Yeah. Right. And everybody's got that today. And there's always one guy in the group. You know, you have 50 boats out there. There's always one guy who's the cop. So you just got to make sure you have a good marine radio, and that guy will keep you straight.
Right.
Can I introduce a concept too
that we see,
and just to share it because you're on the collaborative side, especially you, sir, is that, you know, when we're making policy often, we see, especially on inland, say like inland, we've seen it on, say like a TMDL, which is basically a watershed recovery program for, say like a salmon-bearing area, right? An area that has spawning or freshwater habitat for anadromous fish, and the interest isn't always the interest is within the centric area of where that boundary is of on the land, but we also often see as an agency tribal members, or we see the Federation of Pacific Coast Fisheries. We see an interest that extends inland, and I believe that also extends outland, and that, you know, as you, and not that you don't have enough to do, but I mean, as it is, you know, looking at that band of counties that line the coast, right, that it actually goes far inland. And I'm sure you know that we see that on our side. We see when we're making policy that there's a vested interest on the effect of that recovery plan, because those anadromous fish, and which are in part of their life ocean-going resource, is affected by that. And
right.
So there's a vested interest that door swings both ways.
Do you want to?
Just an observation.
Yeah.
As collaboration goes.
You know? You're absolutely right. And the statewide leadership team recognizes that as well. And when it gets back to outreach and education, you know, reaching in, you know, to the state and even beyond the state,
right,
you know, are pieces that we're grappling with a best way to do that.
Yes.
And just even reaching school children within the inner part of the state, using the state parks in the classroom curriculum and adding MPAs to that to reach, you know, the just even school children. So very much so that's
yes.
the case. So
thank you.
Okay.
We have one sure. member of the public.
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's all right. I didn't signal that I had a question earlier, yeah. but I was going to almost accuse Mr. Noren of cheating off my
We're
notes
fast
here.
With our hand signals.
But I guess it's just a question for Paul. With the collaborative network, do any of your single collaborative entities, say Del Norte or Humboldt, do they interact with anybody from inland like Trinity or Siskiyou County? Are there, because I would imagine there's stakeholders there that do have an interest in what's going on, but is there opportunity not, I mean, because looking at your map, you're strictly coastal, and, you know, the first thing I keyed in on was, well, I don't see anybody inland, but, you know, Klamath obviously would have a big interest in this. But then going through your presentation, I could see where the emphasis is placed, and it's clearly right there on the coastline. But nevertheless, is there an opportunity within those individual network entities to, or have they communicated with anybody inside as part of their stakeholder group?
Sure. Usually within the counties they have, right? I mean, like Mendocino would be a great example. You know, sure, there's some cities on the coast, but the majority of the people live in, you know, Ukiah and inland, and there, you know, there has been representation from those folks. As far as bringing people from, you know, inland counties into the collaboratives, that has not been a huge focus of ours, but it is something that I think could bear fruit in the future. Of course, you know, people that live in inland counties use the coast as well, and figuring out how to best reach out to them is mm-hmm. something that we're all concerned with.
Sure, and I clearly with the mission of what you're trying to do, I see why it is strictly coastal, but there may be resources from inland that you could, you know, just contribute to the cause, and
yeah.
it may be worth branching out to them just to have them invited.
Right. I think the collaborative network is they're babies. They're just coming into their own and just starting to put together their strategic plans and so on and so forth. So I think there's lots of opportunity within these collaboratives to, once they get their feet firmly on the ground and with these next 2 years of funding from the Ocean Protection Council, can start branching out a little bit and kind of really formulate more solidly their identities and what they each want to do.
That's a great yeah. response, and it's just really exciting to see that you have statewide coverage from north to south, and that's
oh yeah,
I also want to add that I know the Del Norte Collaborative is going to Oregon to meet with some of the coastal planning and their counterpart to the collaborative, I guess, for want of better words.
Yeah.
So there is communication within the coasties, I guess.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Valerie, do you have anything? We have one public speaker, and that's Al Gerhardt, and that's regarding ocean conditions.
My name's Al Gerhardt. I just wanted to mention something. I don't know whether you know what the ocean conditions are, especially northern Sonoma County. It gets better as you further north you go. But in some of it, like Stewart's Point, there's no kelp. There's no starfish. It's mostly purple urchins. The abalone are shrinking in their shells because they don't have anything to eat. And it's kind of been taken over by the purple urchins. And the conditions are real bad up there. It's like a barren area where there's no kelp. And I don't know what's going to need to be done, but there's probably going to need to be something done to try to get kelp back. And I guess it's because of the warm water conditions or whatever, but the kelp died out. But I wasn't sure whether you were aware of the conditions up there.
Thank you for informing us. Do any of our panelists want to comment on that?
I'll try. This is Becky Oda again with Department of Fish and Wildlife. And it's a complicated problem, and I share the concern of the gentleman that you just heard from in terms of just overall ocean conditions. We all know and hear it all the time that, and I think Aaron also mentioned it, rapidly changing conditions in the ocean that we're not used to seeing at this pace. And so there are lots and lots of folks looking at that, what we can do. Warm water events has a major impact on some species, not so much on other species. Kelp is one of those that is very susceptible to warm water temperatures. We've had sea star wasting diseases. We've had lots of different things going on. And I guess the only positive thing I could say a lot of positive things, but there are lots and lots of people who are also concerned, and lots of researchers, lots of agencies looking at this, whether it's through climate change issues, and Aaron mentioned, you know, the ocean acidification, water quality issues. You know, I think the scientists still believe that the warm blob is still out there, that we still have the warm blob sitting out there. I wish I could learn how to move that blob away, but there's, did you find it?
No.
So it is a concern, and it's not just up here. There are other pockets throughout the coast where we see effects and impacts of warmer water trends, you know, changing environment, changing ocean conditions, and all I could say is we're all on it. It takes some time to try to identify what the problems are. They're often multivariable problems, interwoven complications, and so on and so forth. So that's the best I can do at this point. Erin, did you have something you want to add?
Yeah, I was just going to say that those types of trends are things that we, you know, are observing through the data that are being collected through MPA monitoring. And to me, and maybe I'm a little biased, but it just speaks to the need to continue doing monitoring going forward, and speaks to the need to this multi-jurisdictional approach to make sure that we're all coordinated in the work that we're doing, so that we can really start to bring those data together and figure out the answers to why we are seeing the trends that we're seeing. But we need the data before we can even start thinking about the why. So to me, it just speaks to the need to continue the collaboration going forward and continue to collect those data.
So just a quick question, but, you know, the warm water blob and El Nino last year and the La Nina that didn't show up this year.
Yeah.
Pacific Oscillation, Decadal Oscillation, what's that role playing if we've even figured that out yet? Is that part of this warm water movement moving through the currents?
I think they're still teasing all of that apart. We're actually in the middle of, with the South Coast baseline reporting happening right now, we're working with the Southern California Coastal Observing Systems to develop a report that'll speak to those results from El Nino and ENSO, so the Southern Decadal Oscillation, the Pacific Decadal Oscillation and the El Nino Southern Oscillation, and how that's all interacting and leading to the blob. We're actually working with those oceanographers to try and tease that all out.
Because like Al said, you know, where he's seeing loss of kelp up my neck of the woods and within my career, Point Arena, Manchester, kelp beds that I don't ever recall seeing there, and they're extensive. And I didn't know if there's a direct correlation between kelp absence or presence and purple urchin absence and presence. I mean, are they capable of grazing to a point? If they're removed from all of the heavy urchin harvesting that went on around Point Arena, can you actually flip it where kelp can be established because there are fewer urchins? Is there a link between the two?
There is a link. There are some studies going on in Southern California. Part of it is as a result of mitigation for Superfund site down around Palos Verdes, kelp restoration, whereby, you know, removing some of the urchins to test that very thing. So I don't believe there's any solid pull down the gavel answer to that question, but I know there are a number of people looking at that. There is a correlation for sure, but how tight is that really, and what are the other variables affecting that correlation is where they're still working on that.
And up here on the North Coast, there's actually a project that this summer just collected some more data working with urchin divers up here in the North Coast, where we have some protected areas where fishing or harvesting of urchins was allowed and now isn't allowed, and then areas nearby where we're seeing urchin variants, and then other areas in that same area where we're not seeing it. And so they've been collecting data now over the past 2 to 3 years, and so we might be able to tease into that a little bit in some of these sites up here in the North Coast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? Well, then I want to call the three of you up here. We're going to give you a letter of appreciation from the regional board. Plus, we have some swag for each and every one of you.
I love swag. I like giving swag, too.
You can just come up.
I should have brought swag.
And your swag is in the mail, by the way.
Yeah.
The posters are in the mail.
Yeah, so I'll just read these in hand, and then why don't you hand me the fossilized sponge? And then
what?
And then, you got the other one. Okay. It comes bearing gifts. So certificate of appreciation, and we have one for each of you, presented for your exceptional work to protect, sustain, and conserve the natural diversity and abundance of marine life and the structure, function, and integrity of marine ecosystems. On behalf of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, we thank you for your outstanding work. So we have...
Oh, thank you.
Come up. And then... I was going to... Right. Let me get the... So, first of all, for Paul, this is a fossilized sponge from Gotland Island, Sweden. And we thought you might like that. And for Erin, for her support of the sciences. And then, Becky, we have yours. It's hidden under wraps here, but... And those are for fishing game. In case you don't want to buy a fishing license, but you want to support the agency, you can buy these enforcement decals over the years, and that's what we got and are presenting to Becky. So,
thank you. Okay. Don, yeah. Can you come around?
Okay, why don't you take one without me and then take one with me?
The last picture we had Jeff going like this.
Is that an invitation or are you asking me to move?
Yeah, if you could help discipline our regional board members.
Yeah. All right, one.
I believe the next item on the business is cannabis.